Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Yes, hide your kids. Gabe Vertulli is here to encourage them to get into trouble. Sort of. Well, not so much trouble, but danger. Controlled danger. You see, Gaver is the author of the new book, 50 Dangerous Things You Should Let Your Kids Do. It's just that, a guide to 50 activities and experiences that he thinks will help foster creativity, problem solving, and learning about safety by brushing up against risk. Gaver Tully, welcome to WNYC.
Oh, it's a great pleasure, Brian.
I'm putting on my safety helmet and wrapping myself in bubble wrap right now.
Okay.
And I'm just going to read a few of the items to give people a sense of what kinds of activities you're suggesting. Lick a 9-volt battery. Stick your hand out the car window. Put strange stuff in the microwave. Break glass. And super glue your fingers together. So to be clear, one day a parent will come home to find their microwave melted down, every vase in the apartment broken, and a kid with no opposable thumbs?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that the point of these exercises is actually to create a context for the parent and the child to talk about the risks of these activities and create a safe context for them.
So give me an example. Pick out anyone from that list or any other one from your book and talk about, you know, what the context actually is and how you would actually have a kid do it.
So let's take the simplest one, lick a 9-volt battery, right? This is a, you know, standard way for people to test the charge. Electricians do this to test the charge in a battery. And there's this sort of nebulous perception that we might get electrocuted by this operation, when in fact the level of stimulation in the tongue is quite low, and while it feels sort of startling, it's not actually shocking. The point of that activity is to give kids a chance to understand that our tongues work on electrical impulses, and we can bypass the chemical receptors and directly stimulate those nerve endings. Now you have the beginning of a whole conversation about how our senses work and a chance for the parents and the kids to kind of talk about electricity in a way that's not purely fear-based.
Listeners, have you ever done anything like this? Are you recoiling in horror right now, parents? Or are you thinking, yeah, I kind of get this, and in fact, I've done some controlled risk-taking with my kids in ways that I think they'll benefit from? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, if you want to get in on this conversation. And let's see, I think here's one of the incredulous ones. Gave a calling up, and it's Adrian in Astoria. Adrian, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
What's your question?
Well, I'd like to know if he has any kids, if he does, how old they are, and if he let them do these things.
Well, Adrian, my wife and I don't have kids. I do run two different school programs where I work with kids on a regular basis. And my friends and my brother are frequently leaving their kids with me so that they can do these kinds of activities. I do take care with children, and I feel deeply that allowing children to experience and learn to recognize risk helps them mitigate that risk when they're on their own.
Thank you, Adrian. Lots of these items seem very boyish. Break glass, make a slingshot, play with fire. Did you think about gender at all when putting this book together?
I did. And if you look through the book, the illustrations are fairly balanced in terms of depicting boys and girls. We don't really find a gender basis for these activities when we're working with the kids, but we do find a gender bias when we're talking to adults about the activities. You know, a lot of young girls want to play with fire, and in fact, I have spent numerous hours playing with fire with children of all gender. And the bias seems to be something that we acquire later in life, where we start to categorize some of these activities as boy things and girl things.
Julie on Facebook is a supporter of this idea. She writes, my kids go to Waldorf school, so they've been cutting vegetables with sharp knives since nursery school, helping to build bonfires and roasting potatoes in it, taking field trips to wilderness places, etc. No one is 100% safe in this world, but the children are taught from an early age to use tools correctly and to take responsibility for using them safely. Is that the same idea as behind your book?
Yes. And in fact, I wish everybody could go to a school like that. You know, knives and knife safety is a really interesting issue. If you look around the world sort of globally, you can find cultures where children at very young ages, at toddler age, are given sharp knives to work with. But for some reason in our culture, we have children who graduate from high school or graduate from college, and that's the very first time they actually own and use a knife. And it seems a disservice, and that we're setting them up for an accident if we don't teach them how to use a common tool like this in a safe way.
John in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. You have a story?
Hello.
Hey, John.
I used to make gunpowder when I was a kid.
Make
gunpowder?
And we
had to go down to Shack's Pharmacy to buy potassium nitrate. And then we ground up our own charcoal out of charcoal briquettes. And we bought sulfur from, the Gilbert chemistry set. And we went, down into my mother's basement, and we made gunpowder.
And then what did you do with it?
We tried to make rockets, but they weren't very successful.
Making gunpowder as a kid. Did you grow up in Colonial Williamsburg?
No, Bay Ridge.
John, thank you very much. Justin in Montclair, you're on WNYC. Hi, Justin.
Yes, how you doing? I just wanted to agree with your guest, and it's really refreshing to hear someone talk like that. I think kids learn the most from taking risks, and they're going to get hurt. I mean, the most protective parent, their kids are going to get hurt anyway. So my kids personally own four-wheelers, and we go rock climbing, camping, fires.
Justin, thank you very much. What's this, Gaver, with putting your hand out the car window? That's one. Now, I actually have a memory of sticking my hand out the car window one time as a kid and getting a first-hand lesson in how birds go. But I think that's not what you have in mind.
Well, it's not exactly what I have in mind, but the point of putting your hand out the window in a car is to experience atmosphere, our air, as a fluid. And because it's so thin, when we just sit in the floor and, stand in our room and wave our arms around, we can feel the wind, but we can't really feel that it could generate lift. And when you get a chance to put your hand out the window and sort of fly your hand, you get a powerful intuitive sense of how birds and airplanes actually fly. And in the topic, we're very clear about find a straight stretch of road, make sure there are no obstacles, and, put your hand out the passenger side of the window. Every step in there designed to reduce the possible danger while still allowing the child to experience the activity in a deep way.
So you learn that about wind currents and stuff as long as your arm doesn't get whacked off at the elbow by the car in the next lane.
That's right. We try always to eliminate the catastrophic danger while, allowing for the occasional nick or cut, maybe a bruise. I mean, those are parts of childhood, and they should be. They teach us deep lessons about taking responsibility for ourselves. But as adults in our society, we do have a responsibility to protect children from catastrophe.
Lou in Stamford, you're on WNYC. Hello, Lou.
Hello.
Hi.
I wanted to make a comment that I think the toys that are marketed to kids today prevent this sort of discovery and being real interactive. I grew up in childhood era in the 1970s where you could get shocked, you could get burned by a toy, caution, everywhere. And it seems like kids today in the age of Game Boys and handheld devices that they're missing all that, and they're missing the opportunity to explore those things.
Lou, thank you. And I think that really goes to this sort of current of a policy proposal that runs throughout your book. You never say it out loud quite explicitly, but you seem to be implying, as Lou is, that we're losing some sort of innovative edge as we encourage kids to tinker less and less.
I think that's right. I think that the long-term cost of overprotecting children is that they never develop a deep intuitive understanding of the world and how it fits together and how it works. If we always mitigate their experience with these prepackaged plastic abstractions of real activities, if we give them a plastic hammer with plastic nails instead of a real hammer with real nails, we're actually denying them foundational experiences that help them think, you know, creatively about the world.
One last Facebook post on this. Sarah writes, a family friend brought home a canister of liquid nitrogen for us to play with. We knew how dangerous it could be and kept our hands out of the way while we froze and smashed potatoes on the patio. Yeah. I don't know. That one's not in the book, right?
That one's not, although we do have play with dry ice, which is another kind of very interesting material because it is so cold.
Gaver Tully, his book is 50 Dangerous Things You Should Let Your Children Do. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and up next, film critic Dana Stevens previews some of the biggest summer movies. Stay with us.